Today's episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. To get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents, visit skillshare.com/creative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am the author of several books, including The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the brand new book, Herding Tigers. Here on the show, we talk about what it means to be prolific, brilliant, and healthy all at the same time as a create-on-demand professional, which means we have to go to work, we have to solve problems, we have to collaborate, we have to create solutions for clients on demand every single day in order to keep our job. But with that comes a unique set of pressures. So here on the show, we talk about those pressures, the dynamics of creating on demand, and how we can position ourselves to produce great work over the long haul. And on today's show, we're going to talk about what it means to run down a dream. My guest is Tim Grawl. Tim has just written a book called Running Down a Dream, in which he documents the process he went through in building his business and figuring out how to turn his vision into reality. We're going to talk about some of the creative struggles that we all face when we're trying to do important work. Before we jump into that, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning platform with over 20,000 classes in business, marketing, technology, design, and more. So you can take classes in social media marketing, data science, web development, basically you name it and they've got it. If there's a skill that you want to learn, you can find it on Skillshare. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, you want to start a side hustle, maybe a little side business to make a little extra money, or if you just want to explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. We've talked on this show many times, and I've written in my books about the importance of lifelong learning. People who have a habit of learning new skills consistently have, not only do they advance quicker in their careers, right? Because they're able to be more resourceful in how they approach their work, but also there's more life satisfaction. People who are making progress in areas of their life that are outside of their career by developing skills, by learning new things, by expanding their perspective and gaining confidence by developing these skills, enjoy their life more than people who are stagnant and reliant upon yesterday's skill set to solve tomorrow's problems. Skillshare is the tool that you can use not only to grow in your career, expand your business, and learn new skills that are going to help you serve your clients more effectively, but also improve your life satisfaction. So I challenge you to join the millions of students like me who are already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners of the Accidental Creative Podcast. You can get 2 months of Skillshare for just, you ready, 99 cents. That's right. Skillshare is offering the Accidental Creative listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 20,000 classes for just 99 cents. It's crazy. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/creative. Again, that's skillshare.com/creative to start your 2 months now. That's skillshare.com/creative. We thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, my guest today is Tim Grawl. Tim is the author of a couple of books before this, but his new book is called Running Down a Dream, Your Roadmap to Winning Creative Battles. I have been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. Tim, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Todd. I've been looking forward to it.
So, Tim, could you just share with us a little bit about who you are and your current work? And then I want to dive into the book because the book kind of tells your story of kind of getting to where you are right now. And I think anyone listening who has ever pursued something difficult that seemed beyond their grasp are going to resonate with your story and your advice and all of that. But kind of just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of who is Tim Grawl and what kind of work do you do right now?
Well, for 10 years, I was a book marketing consultant and still do that a little bit. And then I run booklaunch.com, where I basically teach authors how to build their platform and sell books. And those, my previous two books were around those topics. And then I also now am the host of the Story Grid podcast with the longtime editor, Sean Coyne, where he's been teaching me how to be a better writer for the last 3 years. And so those are kind of my two main things. I really love writers and writing and helping writers. So that's where I spend most of my time.
And I love, by the way, the Story Grid podcast is great because it's sort of like, It's kind of like if a designer said, okay, I'm going to have a senior designer come on the show right now and just basically I'm going to lay my process out in front of them and they're just going to kind of dissect what I'm doing right here in front of everybody who's listening. I mean, I just love the sort of the narrative and the process and all that goes into that show. So thanks for being willing to put that out, because I know it's been indispensable to so many writers, including myself, because the advice, I mean, even it's funny, you would think that like, I mean, I've written, published 4 books. You would think like, I kind of have this thing figured out by now. I'm just beginning to realize how very little I know about what it is to write and publish books. You know, it's kind of funny.
Well, I feel like it's one of those, you know, there's some people I think that figure something out and then they just mine that for decades, which is fine. And then there's people that figure something out and immediately decide to throw it away and move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And not even throw it away, but like, let's walk to the edge and take another step into the scary part.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that is what writing is, you know, even in talking with Stephen Pressfield, who's the editor of The War of Art, also my publisher now, he still goes into those dark places where he doesn't know how to do this. And he's been writing for 50 years or whatever, you know? So it's just like, I think it's always, if you're doing it right, it should feel that way.
Yeah.
Is what I'm learning. If it feels easy, I'm probably playing it too safe.
Yeah. I remember a really poignant moment when I was interviewing Stephen one time, and he was describing to me this moment where he was at an impasse with his work and he was like taking a shower and like crying in the shower. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like of anybody, yeah, I would hope would say, I knew exactly how this is going to play out, it would be you. And yet even you are frustrated and at an impasse and all of that. And I think that gave me incredible, a sense of permission at that point to realize every artist who is being real and authentic and is really trying to pursue the best as it relates to their work is going to feel the entire spectrum of emotions in the midst of accomplishing that.
Well, I feel like, you know, the way I picture it is every time you do something hard and you gain some wisdom and knowledge, it's like you build a little campfire. Mm-hmm. And you're now safe there, right? It keeps the animals away, it keeps the fear away, and you're safe right there. But when you start out to do something new that you've never done before, you like walk to the edge of where that safety is, and then you take another step. Yeah. And, you know, if you keep doing that, you know, you're going to have a string of dozens of campfires behind you, but you're still taking a step into the darkness. Like that never changes. It's still a new fear that you're stepping into. And so, you know, of course, you know, you're still waiting for that to be a cliff, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And so I think that's part of the process. And so that's why we respect the Stephen Pressfields, because they still have the guts to go out there and do it again. When again, they could sit by their campfire and warm themselves for decades and just live on that.
Right.
And so I think that's, you know, that's the creative person that I respect and that I want to be, is just because I've done something does not mean I'm done. You know, it means I, you know, I've done something great. Now I get to go do something else great.
Well, and that's it's, you know, we hear this a lot now, this Walt Disney quote of, we don't make movies to make money. We make money to make movies. Right.
Right.
And that, you know, it's that's so cliche. No, I think most of the artists and the writers and even the entrepreneurs and the people that I really respect that I interact with closely and the people who open their world to me and I can really see inside their world, to the point that I really respect them. They all have that mindset. They're not doing it solely for the purpose of making money. The equivalent would be the artist, as you said, who builds a campfire and just sits by the campfire for years and years and years, where they're just milking it, because really it's not about the art for them. It's about making money. It's about some benefit they get as a side, sort of an ancillary benefit to the art that they make versus the process itself. Right? Making the thing, engaging in the business, helping the people. Whereas the people who are really engaged in the process say, hey, as long as I can pay my bills and I'm making money and I'm profitable, that's great, right? That's really what I care about. And the funny thing is those people tend to, as you know, tend to become more financially successful as well as a byproduct of the fact that they're really interested in the process and helping people.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other thing I think of it as is, you know, when you're, I worked with a personal finance author a while back, and she was explaining to me how one of the ways that you can look at finance is how much time you think in the future, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, so the people, you know, in poverty or, you know, homeless, they're thinking 24 to 48 hours in the future.
Yeah.
You know, you look at lower middle class, they're thinking, you know, 1 to 3 months, middle class a year, you know, and so on until the upper rich can now invest in things that may not pay off for 20 years.
Right.
And I think of that in this realm too, of like, you know, when I was struggling to pay my bills as a business, I didn't spend a lot of time on creative pursuits that might pay off in 3 years, you know, where now, and what you're describing is once you get a little bit of that security, you can start working on things that will have huge payoff if they work. But if they don't work, you're still okay.
Yeah.
And then that gives you a greater level of freedom to, you know, it depends on some people process that and they become afraid of losing it, right? And then that causes them to, in our scenario, sit by the campfire. But another way of looking at it is, look, I've been poor before, you know, let me take another risk. And now I have actual room to play because my last risk paid off. Now I can risk for 2 years before it really hurts me, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, that's another way of thinking about it is, you know, cause you said that, you know, it tends to pay off when they continue to risk. And I think that's why, because now they can, you know, there's less and less constraints on what they can do. So it gives them opportunities to think bigger and think longer term than just a month from now, 3 months from now, or getting this one book out.
Yeah. Well, and it reminds me of something Seth Godin said one time. So, okay. So we've officially said Steve Pressfield and Seth Godin now. So we've got like two of the three of the Holy Trinity, right? It's like the obligatory reference to both of this. I don't know who the third would be. We have to figure out who the third is. I'm sure somebody else
thought it was Todd Henry.
Yeah. No, decidedly not.
Okay.
So, you know, he said one time in an interview, he said, you know, the key is to take risks in a way that allows you to stay in the game if you fail.
Yeah.
Right.
I've heard him say similar things. Yeah.
Yeah. And that really struck me in a profound way as well, because I think we often think about entrepreneurship as taking big risks and going all in and all of that. But really, if you care about the mission, you can't, you have to be very strategic about when you go all in, because if you fail after you've gone all in, you're not going to be able to accomplish the mission anymore. And so, you know, if you really understand what you're trying to do, what you're trying to build, the risks that you take have to reflect your care for the mission, not just your care for this moment and the opportunity that is presenting itself to you.
Right. Yeah. I've heard him talk to writers about that, of just like, how long can you go without getting paid? Mm. And, you know, thinking about that as you set off on this and trying to create a scenario where you can go for years without getting paid, because then the, you know, there's nothing, and I've done this and destroyed things with it. There's nothing worse you can do for this type of work than put financial strain on it.
Yeah.
You know, actually this book, Running Down a Dream, is the opposite of a smart move for me. You know, like it's distracting. It's fracturing my brand. I now don't know what to tell people to go look at, right? You know, what website or whatever, you know, it's so different from anything I've done. And, but yet I'm in a position where I can take those kind of risk and it's okay. Like the smart move would be write another book about book marketing.
Right.
But you know, this
well, because you know it's going to sell, you know, you've already got a built-in audience for it. You know, it's going to build your brand. It's going to give you more like consulting work on the back end if you want it or whatever, right?
Right. Where like this book, I worked on it, you know, off and on. It wasn't like, you know, I was churning on it for hours every day, but I worked on this book for 2 years. But the reason I could do that and also come out with it and not sweat whether or not it did well was because I have this whole other job that funds everything that I do. And so it allowed, you know, when putting it in terms of what we're talking about with Seth, it's like I could write this book for years for free because I have this whole other thing that supports it. And whether it's a day job or an entrepreneurial venture or, your last three books that are selling well still, it doesn't matter. But I think it that goes into that idea of like, I'm allowed to do this now because it doesn't threaten the fact that I can keep writing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I was turned on to a Linda Berry quote by Austin Kleon. She said the secret to eternal happiness is essentially low overhead, right? It's keeping your expenses low and like low overhead basically so that you have the freedom to be able to take these risks or to engage in the kind of work that you choose to do versus the kind of work you have to do just to pay the bills. And by the way, I think I just hit the third of the Holy Trinity, Austin Kleon, right?
There you go. That's a good one. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say Julia Cameron, maybe with the artist way. That might be the actual, I don't know. But, but I think there's a lot of wisdom in them. What you're saying is, hey, I've got a steady job that pays my bills and I do good work and I'm creating a lot of good in the world. But at the same time, I recognize I can't look to my regular job to be the sum total fulfillment of my creative expression. And there are things I need to do that might fall outside of that. And so as part of my portfolio over here, I'm going to begin taking some creative risks that may or may not pay off financially or may not pay off commercially, whatever. But I need to do this because this is a part of what I need to express creatively in order to pursue the vision that I have for my work.
Right. Yes. You said it very well.
Great. We're done. No. Okay.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
so what I would love I don't want to get into the entire people. Listen, if you're sitting right now listening to this, if you're in the car, you're working out, you're taking a walk, whatever it is, and you're listening to this, and you have any inkling that you want to pursue something beyond what you're doing right now, this book, Running Down a Dream, it's funny because it's almost like somebody has been looking over your shoulder, following you around and observing what it's like to live in your shoes. If you've ever done this before, this will sound like every story that any entrepreneur has lived out. It's such an amazing articulation of the process of striving to do something great. But one of the things I really want to hone in on, because we can't talk about the entire book, obviously, and we want people to read it, is the section on systems and how systems became so important to you and how you think about building something. So can you just give us a little bit of a summary of what was it about your life and what was going on in your life and all of that that made you realize that systems were kind of the thing that were lacking at that particular moment?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of different things that come together, but I think the thing that caused the most pain is I was moving a lot, but not getting a lot done.
Yeah.
And it was just getting frustrating because it's like, you know, I'm working 60, 70 hours a week. I'm not making enough money. I feel like I'm pushing hard on this thing and it's just nothing's happening. And so it was actually our mutual friend, Josh Kaufman, that first turned me on to thinking about systems. Mm-hmm. And now the way I think of it is, each day, I just think of it this way. This is like super pseudoscience, so I can't imagine this is grounded in reality. This is kind of how I like view the world, is each day I wake up and I have a certain capacity to focus and make decisions. And every time I make a decision, I use up a little bit of that capacity. But the problem is that my brain can't tell the difference between deciding what shoes to wear today and writing the next paragraph in my novel. Mm-hmm. And so every time I make a decision, it kind of zaps a little bit of that energy for the day. And so what I started trying to do is remove as many decisions from my day as possible. And this applies to almost everything, like what I eat, what time I get up in the morning, when I go work out, what I'm working on, what I wear, who I'm talking to, when I do phone calls, when I don't do phone calls. and trying to structure things in an extremely systematic way so it reduces the mental overload that just my life takes. Right. So that when I sit down to write, I haven't zapped up my focus in the previous 3 hours on minutia that is not useful to my work. And so then I just started experimenting. You know, another way I thought of this is I was so bad at procrastinating. Is I started thinking of this as like, you know, my definition of procrastination is assuming tomorrow I will be less stupid and less lazy than I am today, right? That's what we think. Well, I didn't write today, but tomorrow I'm really going to crack the whip.
Right.
So I started changing it and I started thinking, okay, let's assume that tomorrow I will be just as stupid and lazy as today. How can we set things up so it'll be just a little bit harder to make those bad decisions, right? And so I just started, you know, trying to create anything that would kickstart me to do my work and to avoid making decisions so that when I sat down to work, I could actually focus and get it done. And so, so that's where these ideas of systems came from, is mostly like I was just running into so many problems. And what I realize now looking back is I kept making the same decisions over and over. You know, so when I was working with clients, I would rewrite proposals every time instead of having a system for how I write proposals. Yeah. Or I would do anything people ask me to do instead of honing in on three or four things that I'm really good at and just doing those over and over and over. You know, so you know, there's 100, probably thousands of ways to apply this to what you're doing. But my thing is, let's take the things that, you know, I call them essential things, right? Essential things like taking your kids to school, eating lunch, working out, things that you need to just survive, but aren't your work, right? You know? And so let's make some systematic changes to those things so that they don't take a bunch of thought, so that I can actually focus on my work.
That is such excellent advice. And it's so overlooked, I think, by people, that people don't realize how much mental capacity is taken up by those little decisions every day. And if you want to be able to have the capacity you need to creatively approach your work in dangerous ways, then some things in your life just have to be settled, right? And I think it's back to the low overhead thing again. I think that what we're talking about is low cognitive overhead. We're talking about, you know, don't have such unnecessary complexity in your life where you have to make so many decisions every day that aren't related to your work that you don't have any energy left for your work. Instead, make those decisions in advance and keep low cognitive overhead so that you can focus on all of those very important decisions that you need to make in order to produce the work you're capable of.
Yeah. You know, I always had this view that like artists were these kind of freewheeling people that, you know, stayed up till 5 a.m. and got up at 1 and, you know, like, and some of them are, I'm sure, but I don't meet those people. Like, I've worked with dozens and dozens and dozens of like prolific, creative people. And most of them live an extremely regimented life. Like, they get up at the same time every day. They go to bed at the same time every day. They like have, you know, their social and family life is settled. Like, it's not always an upheaval. Stephen King talks about this in On Writing, of like, he's been married to the same woman forever, you know? And they keep, they do everything they can to keep order and calm so that all of the drama and all of the creativity isn't going into just managing their life. It's going into their art.
Right.
So it allows, you know, we all have the need for drama. We all have the need for the creativity that is exploding, but most of us use it on gossiping about our friends, causing turmoil in our personal lives, you know, staying out late drinking and getting up and barely getting to work on time. Like, that's where most people put that energy. And the prolific creative people I know, like, cut all that shit out and focus on letting that drive their art and not drive their life.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I agree with you. The people that I see, the people I really respect anyway, are exactly the kind of people you describe. And also, by the way, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, but like, they don't drive flashy cars. They don't live in flashy homes. They don't, you know, try to flash it. You know, it's like they're living unassuming life, much more unassuming than you would expect if you knew their public work, right? Or their public persona, at least, which is amazing. The book is called Running Down a Dream. The author is Tim Grawl. Tim, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. Where can people come find you if they want to find you?
Well, if they're interested in book marketing, they can go to booklaunch.com. If they want to see more about the book, there's runningdownadream.com. Those are probably the two best places. I also have been posting stuff on Instagram, but it's mostly just pictures of my book, so it's pretty boring. But those are the two places to find me.
But if you really like pictures of Tim's books, go to Instagram, because that's where you're going to find it. Tim, thanks much for taking your time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
And as always, thank you for listening. To get every episode delivered as it's released, just subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, or subscribe by email at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. I'll see you next time.